There's a man named Eric Liddell. He was born to Scottish missionaries who were working in China. He watched his parents serve others, share the gospel, put themselves in harm's way for the sake of the good news of Jesus. You could say that the gospel was imprinted on his heart. It's what he knew. Eventually, his parents moved back to Scotland, and Eric began running. He was into all kinds of sports, but he really enjoyed running. As a matter of fact, he was an incredibly fast runner. Throughout high school and then to his 19, 20 years old, during that time, he became a champion runner. In fact, he was so fast that it became apparent to him and to others that he could even be an Olympian representing his country. And so he trained, he competed, he continued to do well against some of the fastest runners throughout the world. And so in 1924, Eric Liddell had the opportunity to realize one of his greatest dreams, and that was to compete in the Olympics in Paris, France. As he was preparing himself for that race and for the different competitions that he was going to participate in, he got word that the qualifier for the 100-meter race, which was his best event, was going to take place on a Sunday. For Eric, he had learned from a very young age that Sunday was the Lord's Day. On that day, one did not participate in recreation. That was a day of rest and worship. And so for him, based on his experiences up to that point, he had a decision to make. Remember, this is the Olympics, a world stage. Would he run or would he go against a principle that he held dearly? The British Olympic Committee, he was going to run for Great Britain. They knew about Liddell's convictions, and so they began to pressure him to run. When they noted that they weren't going to change his mind, they then got in touch with the main Olympic Committee to say, could we change the day of that qualifier? Of course, that group said no. So Liddell said no, and this Olympic group said no. The British people began to pressure him. His name was mentioned in their newspapers. I can't believe that Liddell is not going to participate in this race to bring national notoriety to our sports. Liddell, over and over again, said no, based on my conviction that Sunday is the Lord's Day, I will not compete in that qualifier. Now, some of you might be thinking, he could have run the race and won and had this wonderful platform in which to proclaim the gospel. That's not the way that he saw it, though. He saw that remaining true to his conviction would be a platform for proclaiming the gospel. And that's exactly what he did. So why did he do that? Well, at his heart, he recognized that Jesus was his king, and he was going to live his life in accordance to how the king would want him to live. I want us to go to a scene. It's right before Jesus is going to be crucified on the cross. He's before a very powerful and influential person, at least in that day and in that location, a man named Pilate. This is in John chapter 19, verses 28 through 37. John 19, beginning at verse 28. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews? Is that your own idea?" Jesus responded, "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." Which, in making that claim before Pilate, he is recognizing about himself that he is in fact a king. "If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." There's another mention of Jesus as king and his kingdom. "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into this world was to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And so if you're on the side of truth, then you will believe that Jesus is king. What he's doing here before Pilate is very powerful. Pilate, if you are on the side of truth, if you get what is really taking place in the world and see what God is doing through me, then you yourself will recognize me as king. And Jesus goes on and he says, "But the kingdom in which I reign, it's not of this world. It's from another place." A little bit before this, Jesus had said something to his disciples. It's very powerful, but in many ways, it's very difficult to swallow. Listen to what Jesus says in John 15, verses 18 through 21. It parallels, in many ways, what Jesus says to Pilate in John 19. Listen to these words from Jesus to his disciples. "If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first." Isn't it always interesting when Jesus uses a word that you teach your kids not to use? "If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world." Remember what Jesus says to Pilate, "My kingdom is not of this world." "That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you? A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me." And so Jesus talks to his disciples and he says, "You don't belong to the world. You belong to a different kingdom. You pledge allegiance to a different king, one who is going to go before Pilate, be put on trial, and is going to be put to death on a cross." And we can ask this question. It's a question I think that all of us have to ask ourselves as disciples of this king. If they don't belong to this world, then what world, what kingdom do they belong to? And how is that going to shape the way that they live? And now moving over to 1 Peter. Remember that these disciples that Jesus had talked to in John 15, recorded in John 15, they listened to Jesus. They were empowered by the Spirit. They did proclaim that there was a king who had died for the sins of the world. They proclaimed that there was one that people should put their allegiance in, that hope and salvation was found in this king. And there were folks, people in Rome, for instance, that believed it to be true and recognized Jesus as king. And we read this. Peter shares this with some disciples. "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you've received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits us. And so when you recognize Jesus as the King, when you recognize that your kingdom is different than this world, there is a certain way to live. And so Peter tells these disciples to not give in to these sinful desires, to live such good lives among people that don't know Jesus, that they may come to know Jesus. They may come to know this true King. If Jesus is King, if He's really the Lord of our lives, then there's a certain way that we ought to live. There's a certain way that we should order our lives. Think of the Sermon on the Mount as kind of the King's speech, to use a term from a movie that came out a few years ago. The Sermon on the Mount. How should you treat people? Go the second mile. Don't look lustfully on a woman. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. If someone strikes you on the cheek, turn to them the other. Give to the one who asks. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Don't worry. Do not judge. This is the King's message to the citizens of His kingdom. This is the way you ought to live. We read this as well in that speech from a king. Not everyone, and this is Matthew 7, starting at verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Notice the action there. Only the one who does the will of my Father. Verse 22. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, the King, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. He says this. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Anyone who hears these words and puts them into action. That's what living in relationship to the King is about. It's not simply memorizing a certain amount of verses or showing up to this or that. No, it's about action. It's about doing what several folks did the other day, part of the Leander Church of Christ, serving folks a Thanksgiving meal. Putting it into action. And remember what else Jesus said in Matthew 6. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Seek first His kingdom. I've used this object lesson before, but I'd like to again. I use a stool. So it's not a throne, but use your imaginations here a little bit this morning. For a moment, allow this stool to recognize the throne of your heart. When we recognize Jesus as Messiah, Jesus as the Anointed One, Jesus as Christ, as King, we are saying that He and only Jesus can occupy that spot. But we know how it goes, right? because of control, because of fear, because of pride, we say, no, we want to be king. We want to sit on that throne. And so it goes like this. If Jesus is king, if he occupies that throne, if we recognize that he is going to lead in our lives when it comes to things like money, for instance, Jesus is going to have something to say about how we use our finances, how we use the resources that God has blessed us with. Wasn't it Jesus who said something like, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also? Or give to those who are in need? Or when you saw the stranger, the poor, the hungry, the prisoner, what you did for them, you did for me. Or how about with our time? How do we use our time? Perhaps I wasn't the only one that was shocked when Dalton McGuire a couple weeks ago mentioned that the average American spends 6 hours watching television. That is a lot of television per day. Per day. If Jesus is our king, if we are a citizen in his kingdom, if we are trying to live lives that bring honor and glory to the only one that we should be seeking to bring honor and glory to, Jesus the King, then how will we use our time as we reflect on our day? Is it apparent that Jesus is dictating how we use our time? Or how about with relationships and how we treat others, how we talk with others, how we listen to others, how we encourage others? How would Jesus have us do that? Technology, something that Dalton talked to us about, is how we are using our technology. Are we using it as a platform for good, to connect with others, to share the gospel with others? Are we using it in that way, or are we using it to serve our own flesh? And so, when it comes to Jesus being on the throne of our hearts, it will hit every aspect of our lives. And here's the cool thing about recognizing Jesus as the king of our lives. It's we participate in his kingdom. And so there are incredible blessings that come with this. For instance, we're with others. We have a church family, right? So we're not in this alone. We have one who is leading us with others. No one's a lone ranger when it comes to living in the kingdom. And we know that this kingdom will never fail. This one who was crucified on the cross on the third day rose from the dead, conquering death and paving the way for all of us to conquer death and live with him for eternity. In C.S. Lewis's The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's this really powerful scene. Of course, it's about these little kids that are having this adventure in Narnia. And really, the whole story is an allegory about Jesus and about what God is doing through Jesus. So there's this moment in the story where these children come across Mr. and Mrs. Beaver. It's interesting. Again, you got to use your imagination a little bit. Aslan is a lion, and he represents Christ. He's a Christ figure in the story. And so there's this interaction between these little children and these beavers. And I want you to hear a part of their conversation. It goes like this. Aslan is a lion, the lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you. We get caught up in safety. But when we recognize that Jesus is the king, is the Messiah, we sign up for a wild, risky adventure that goes beyond even our wildest imagination. Jesus is the king. He's good. The king, he died on a cross. But on the third day, he raised from the dead, or he was raised from the dead. Is he safe? No. He's not safe, but he's good. He is the ultimate good. And so we pray, and again, going back to the king's speech, if you will, Matthew chapters 5 through 7, the Lord's Prayer. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Through the church, through his body, the reign of God becomes evident through us. And here's the deal. All of those that we interact with, everybody needs to know this king. And so we are like messengers for the kingdom, telling people that there is a king. He's good. Hope and salvation come through him. Here in a moment, David's going to lead us in another song. We call this the invitation song. And during this invitation song, you have the opportunity to come down and first of all, let us know what's going on in your life. If there's things that you would like us to pray for, while David is leading this song, you can come down to the front and let us know. We'll have shepherds here down in front. We'll also have shepherds in the back of the auditorium. And as you share those, we'd be glad to pray with you and for you. Perhaps today there is somebody here that has not yet given their life over to this king for whatever reason. Perhaps today is a day that you are ready to acknowledge that Jesus is the king, is the Savior, is the Lord. Give your life over to him in the waters of baptism. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now and stand, or come forward as we stand and continue our worship.
I will.